Thanks, Ken, and thank you all for staying this long. This is usually the last stretch where people say, oh, I don't know if this is worth it. Maybe I'll go home. So we're glad that you stayed, and in particular, because what we're going to be talking about are families, and you see the title of my talk is Family Matters, because families matter so much. And it was Mary Zanarini who said at our 2002 conference in White Plains, New York, was that who stays the road with people who suffer with this disorder? It's the family members. And so long, family members have been vilified about this disorder. They've caused it, they've exacerbated it, they've done everything to promote it. And actually, we take a much different perspective, and that's why we started this organization, to spread a different kind of word, is that family matters and families are important. So why do we focus on family members at all? Well, let's first look at it from the person who has the disorder, and we'll call them the BPD sufferer. People don't like the word consumer, they don't like the word patient, so we use sufferer, and that also has its limitations. We turn for a minute to a construct called expressed emotion, and this is a psychosocial predictor of relapse that has been out in the literature for about 20 years now, with the diagnoses primarily first of schizophrenia, and then it went into bipolar disorder, depression, eating disorders. And what was investigated was the family environments to which a patient went home to after a hospital discharge. And what happens is that a family member is interviewed, the interview is taped, and then it's coded on certain attributes to see what kind of environment is that patient or sufferer returning home to. There are three main components of the construct. There's amount of critical comments that are made about the patient, there's what we call emotional over-involvement, and there's also a level of hostility. So the question was, what impacts a patient when they return home to this, to an environment that has any of these three components? And what was found in schizophrenia was that if a patient went home and their relatives rated high on critical comments, or rated high on what's called emotional over-involvement, or rated high on what's called hostility, actually those patients did not do as well. So it became known as a predictor of relapse. Well, Dr. Jill Hooley and I, Jill's up at Harvard, she and I decided to do the first study on expressed emotion with patients who have borderline personality disorder. And we had a very interesting finding. What we found was that criticism and hostility do not predict overall outcome. That doesn't mean that we should be critical or hostile, but that in fact that doesn't impact the course of the disorder. What does impact the disorder is the amount of what's called emotional over-involvement, or EOI, by the family member. And what that means is, in many ways, it means a level of protectiveness, a level of what might be seen as over-concern, a level of attachment to the patient, we believe, in some ways. So what we like to think about is, what this really means is that family members who are involved with their relatives, those relatives actually do better. Now, those of you who have a relative with this disorder, and those of you who do not but have children, know that when your child is suffering, you're suffering as well. So I'm not quite sure what it means to be over-involved with a person who's struggling with some sort of illness. So the take-home message about this is that the higher emotional involvement the family member portrays towards the sufferer, the better the patient does over a one-year course of the illness. So that's why family matters from a patient's point of view or a sufferer. Well, what about from the family member's point of view? Why should family members stay involved? And I credit Ken Sill. Ken says that he has his most favorite cartoon, and this is my most favorite slide cartoon that's really his. And I want to read it to you because I think it well depicts what happens to family members. So you see the duck coming down the hall, and his parents are sitting in the living room, and says, here he comes, Earl. Remember, be gentle but firm. We are absolutely, positively not driving him south this winter. Families often will say driving a duck to Florida would be easy to what we do. We've driven horses from Boston to Florida in vans. We've done things that we never thought we would be doing. What happens to family members is that they lose their sense of mastery. In a sense, they lose their objectivity, and they lose their centeredness about making some decisions, and they end up doing things that they don't want to do. So we've termed that in some way a loss of mastery, and it comes from interfacing with someone who's suffering so much that they have the symptomatology of BPD. We decided to look at what it's like for a family member when they have a relative with this disorder. And what we found was that they are high on grief, burden, depression, and mastery or empowerment. And any family member in here, I'm sure, would not disagree with any of these constructs. And we know that there are more, too. There's guilt. There's a lot of other things that go into it when you have a relative with this disorder. So what is burden? Well, burden is when you worry about the person's future. And 94% of people in our study, that was the number one thing that they were concerned about. Then there was the intensity of family friction. When you have someone with BPD, and BPD occurs in the context of relationships, so it's understandable that this would play back into the family system. The impact on one's own ability to concentrate. Family members have a hard time concentrating because they're so distracted about what's going on with their relative. There's an upset to household routines. There's reduce in leisure time for the family member. Family members also are very concerned that their own behavior will make the patient worse. And they also worry about how much the patient has changed. So this just gives you an idea of what the construct of burden means. So what do families do when they find that their relative has this disorder? Well, they seek information. That's what we all do when we're given a diagnosis. We go and try to find out as much as we can about it. Well, what we found was that in our study, the family members who had more knowledge were actually more hostile. They felt more burdened. They expressed more subjective burden. They reported more depression. And they had a higher level of their own symptomatology. So what, in fact, does that mean? If family members have more knowledge and it impacts them this way, does that mean that ignorance is bliss? Actually, we think not. We think what it means is that if you go on the internet and you read up on borderline personality disorder, you want to take the computer and throw it out the window, because what's on the internet makes you feel that there is no hope, that there's nothing's going to change, and that this is going to be a lifelong illness that the person has. Well, actually, that's not true. So what we believe is the problem with our study was that we were testing knowledge, but we know that family members need a lot more than knowledge. They need what's called family psychoeducation. Family psychoeducation is something that's been out in the literature for about 30 or 40 years now, again starting with schizophrenia. And what it is it's a program that families attend. It provides information and current research. It teaches skills to increase coping abilities, and it provides a support network. What we did, since there was no program like that out there for families who had a relative with BPD that was out in the community, we designed a program called Family Connections. And this is based on the work that Dr. Alan Frazetti, who's at the University of Nevada, and I did. Both of us are clinicians. We both ran groups where we had families in the groups with the patients. But what we also found was, as did Dr. John Gunderson at McLean Hospital, that the family group he did as ours didn't translate out into the community. As much as the professionals might be committed to working with families, the most committed are family members. So what we've done is now we've designed this 12-week course. It's for many families at the same time, typically up to 12 family members. It's community-based. We do it in churches. We do it at WISE. We actually do it at many of the local NAMI affiliates, because they've taken this this program with great interest. Because what we found was that families have been traumatized by going into hospitals. They've had their loved ones there. It's been nightmares for them. When we talk about PTSD and co-occurring with borderline personality disorder, I think we can also talk about it occurring with family members, that what they've gone through in their relationships with their loved one, the person that they care very much about, has been traumatizing for them as well. So that's why we do this in a more neutral environment. The group is for family members only. We would love to invite sufferers in there as well, but since it's not run by professionals, we just feel it's not an appropriate setting at this time. It's designed specifically for people who have a relative with BPD or BPD features, which means they have some symptomatology. And those of you who know about this disorder, it doesn't take five in the criteria to make your life miserable with the disorder. You can have three and your life has a lot of havoc in it. And our group is led by trained family members. They come either into New York for a weekend or Reno, Nevada. We're thinking this year to do it in Dallas because we're going to also be hosting a conference there. They come for the weekend. They get trained to do the course. They then take it back to their home community. And then I have ongoing dialogue with them weekly by email, by phone consultation, and they run this group in their location. We now have the group running in about 17 locations at different times throughout the country. We have a group in Ottawa, Canada that's just been unbelievable. They're hoping to get a group up in England. The Swedish government gave a grant to set up several sites in Sweden. So the program's catching on basically because families are so desperate and need help. So what we do in our group is we provide current information and research. We teach coping skill strategies. We do individual skills, mini DBT skills. We teach family skills, and we provide a social support network. Family members say that it's a very weird feeling to walk in that room that first night because they're so scared, they feel embarrassed. You don't normally talk about having a relative with BPD at a wedding that you're at. So when families come into the room and there are other families whose stories so much mirror theirs, it's an incredible experience for them. And the powerfulness of what goes on in that room goes beyond the 12 weeks. So is family connections beneficial? Well, we've done several studies, and what we found out was with grief, the grief goes down. The orange bar is when people enter the program, that's the level that they're at. The middle bar is where they're at in grief when they leave. And the smallest bar is where they're at 3 months even after the group has ended. So what we believe is that the skills carry through and carry on, and so some of these constructs continue to decline. Same thing with depression and distress. The highest is when they come in, the middle is when they leave the program and complete it, and then the smallest one is what happens 3 months after they haven't been in the program. Burdens, the same thing. Here's a nice change with mastery empowerment that actually on the left, the orange bar is when they come in, and as you can see, when they leave, they feel more empowered, they feel like they can handle things more effectively, and the green bar is actually what happens 3 months after the group ends. So the skills stay with people. We've done two replication studies. We've replicated those findings. What we've now started is we get emails all over the country of people saying, can we buy the manual? How can we take the course? What can we do? So we decided to do what we call teleconnections. And what this is, we have a pilot study going on now. This is 12 weeks. It's the same manual that we have for our Family Connections program, but we do it by conference call. So at 7:15 on Tuesday nights, Eastern Standard Time, we made the group only 8 people because of the different modality. People call into a conference call number. The day before, they've gotten the lecture via the internet. They hear not only the lectures that are going on, but in time, they also begin to know each other, even though we have never seen these people. But they, through this conference call, through sharing their stories, through sharing their homework, because that's part of the program, there's a connection that's forming, even though people are across the country. So, for example, we have two Debbies in our group. So one calls herself Debbie from San Antonio, and the other is from Debbie from Kansas City. There's already a solid connection that's formed, even though these people have never met. And I have the privilege, as does Trish, who's here, we sit as silent observers. Our leaders are two seasoned Family Connections leaders. They've run the course, I think, 3 times in Houston, so they know how to do the course in person. We also have a secure page on our organization website where it's like their own chat room, but it's only these group members. It's where they put their homework in, so they do their homework. They submit it on the online secure page, and then it's reviewed in class. So it's quite a unique experience. We've had this, we put out a announcement about this, I think at the January, we now have 5 full groups waiting to start. The need for this obviously is so great. Families are just so desperate. What we hope to do in the future is to conduct a randomized controlled trial. We hope to understand the mechanisms of change in family connections. We know it's not just the information. We believe the skill building is important, and we also think the support network is important. But we also believe that it's the combination of these three. I think if you just do a support network, people will stop coming. They need more than that. They need more than information. They need the combination of these. What we also want to do is measure patient change. Although we hear over and over again from family members how their ill relative has changed, we have not been able to document that with data yet. Although our Swedish people did do it, and what they found was that patients improved just by their family members being in the group. So we're hopeful that down the road we'll be studying this more and also be able to make it more available to other people. Thank you.